Mini episode 414 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You'll want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome, everyone, to mini episode number 414 of the FDH Lounge, a very special mini episode. I actually slotted it this way to make sure that this fell for the 700th hour of FDH Lounge programming. You have, of course, with you today Rick Morris, Jason Jones, your original FDH Lounge dignitaries, and I handled the arrangements to make sure that this one would be the 700th hour of programming, that it would cross the barrier for that, because how fitting would it be? Jason and I have actually been talking football since before there was an FDH Lounge, when it was just fantasydrafthelp.com. And again, this broadcast is our official companion piece to Pro Football Draftology 2014, which you can check out at fantasydrafthelp.com, bfdhlounge.com, and other fine 21st Century Media Alliance outlets. And we're going to be covering everything that you need to know about the NFL draft this year, wading through all of the opinions, wading through the different assessments that are out there, and bringing you, we believe, as always, the truth of the matter. And for that, I have to bring in my partner, senior editor Jason Jones of the FDH Lounge at fantasydrafthelp.com, the man to whom I handed the baton long ago. He is in charge of our NFL draft coverage, our rankings. I, of course, contribute some of my own material to that. But Jason is our chief analyst, and I believe the very best there is, and you are about to find out why if you didn't know already. Jason, my man, good to have you on today. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, not bad. This is a weird one, though. I got to tell you, I'm making tiny adjustments, like, every day. It's crazy.
I suspect, yeah. We will probably be doing that going all the way up into the draft itself. And, again, people should continue to follow us, whether it be on Facebook, Twitter, or at the FDH Lounge or fantasydrafthelp.com, and continue to see what we've got going on all the way up until then. So much to get to. I don't even know where to start. I guess we will start with the player who is proclaimed to be the one certain Hall of Famer in this class. If he stays right with his attitude, which seems to be a little bit of a question, attitude slash motor, if he doesn't get hurt, Jadeveon Clowney, that monster defensive end, he was the consensus number one pick coming into the season. The fact that he's not the consensus number one pick right now shows you that, again, people dimmed on him a little bit, I'm afraid, with the past season that he had in college. But, again, the man has been nothing but an impact player, even if the stats didn't necessarily show it this past year in the SEC. The old ball coach, unfortunately, taking a few gratuitous swipes his way. What are your thoughts on Clowney? The last guy I remember getting this level of hype coming out was Julius Peppers. I was talking to somebody about this off air the other day. Our good friend at the FDH Lounge, Tom Denk, Mr. Flatstick himself, and we were talking about that, and he's somebody who's a little bit down on Clowney because of the motor issue. I said he reminds me of Peppers in terms of how he's been built, at least on the field, and Peppers is kind of a strange case. I think you could say that he's lived up to the hype, but the hype was so enormous, I don't know if you necessarily feel that he has. But what are your thoughts on Clowney and what he's going to be doing the rest of the decade and beyond?
Well, first off, we look at the Peppers analogy. I think the only thing you have to ask yourself is, regardless of whether he moves on through free agency or gets traded or any of that throughout his career, if you're the team that picked him, would you have used a number one to get him? And I think he absolutely would have. He was productive enough to merit that. Now, whether or not he lived up to, you know, this mythological hype that we put on, that's a whole different story. The thing that strikes me with Clowney is this happens every time. It's just that it's so many people believe that he is all-time great. that it's getting dissected the way it is. There's always one guy, at least one guy, that everyone looks at and goes, he's the guy. He's the guy. And we all sit back and go, well, you know, there's this, this, and this that make him not perfect. I think the motor issue is way overblown. I think, I don't know how to put this gently, but the guy's being compared to potentially Bruce Smith type of all-time great. I mean, we're talking top 10 best defensive ends that have ever played the game and may ever play the game. And what strikes me was a conversation I saw with a few different NFL Hall of Famers at the defensive line positions. And they basically said that you can play this guy all three downs if you want to. He's that good. But what successful defensive end at the NFL level plays every single snap? And the fact of the matter is that if you are going to have him playing that much, he's not going to go 100%. And you better hope he doesn't go 100%, because if he does, he's going to kill himself before he gets started. And I believe one of those people was even Warren Sapp, that said, it doesn't bother me one bit, you know, if he takes off a clear running play or is in the game too much. Because if you really maximize his potential and you get him in on absolute passing downs and really let him pin his ears back, let him go 110% on 70% of the plays, then he's everything you hoped he'd be. So I'm all for it. I think he's phenomenal. I think he's the clear-cut number one. And I even look at Houston and say, maybe you have other needs. I don't care. You take him. Because Jadeveon Clowney at 100%, 70% of the time, next to J.J. Watt and hopefully a healthy linebacker core, and that's a situation no offense wants to face. So you take it and hope for the best. Now, I say all of this knowing full well that I was one of the skeptics going back to, say, October, November of the college football season 2013. So I've actually gone from the guy is way overhyped to I pretty much believe wholeheartedly deserves every bit of it.
I tend to agree with you on that. And as far as it goes with him, yeah, taking off the occasional play here or there, and not necessarily literally taking a knee when we say that, but again, as far as full effort goes, players have to ration what's in the tank if they're going to be out there more than they should be, because, again, you want 100% when he's supposed to pin his ears back and come off the edge. Speaking of off the edge, there's two other players that we speak of at a very, very, very high level. It should be top 10 picks, or at least have a very good chance to be. Clowney is a defensive end. These guys outside linebackers, Khalil Mack of Buffalo, Anthony Barr of UCLA. How do you rate these guys? Again, they're a step down from Clowney in terms of physical abilities coming off the edge, just because, again, Clowney could be that once-in-a-generation player. Doesn't mean that these guys aren't really exceptional in their own rights. And again, a little bit of apples and oranges, defensive lineman slash outside linebacker, albeit depending on the defense, whether it's a 4-3 or a 3-4, it could be a lot of the same function. Your thought on Mack and on Barr? I know in particular with Mack that you're very, very, very high on him.
Well, let's just say that if Jadeveon Clowney had come out last year or stayed or whatever, I would probably say Khalil Mack's the number one guy on the board. Here's the thing. I see him as sort of a Von Miller type. You know, physically he's big enough, he's stout enough that he could actually play inside if you really wanted him to. But he's also fast enough and relentless enough to play outside linebacker and the kind that gets sacks and gets production. I think you'd be talking about, you know, maybe not year one, but I think in year two or three, you're probably looking at a guy who could potentially be, you know, 16 to 20 sacks if they use him right. I would say that he's probably 1B to Jadeveon Clowney's 1A. I really think he's that good. And it goes back to that week one game against Ohio State. And my expectations for Ohio State were not as high as some, but it's still Ohio State versus Buffalo. And Khalil Mack was just a terror in that game. I think he had an interception for a touchdown, a couple fumble recoveries, sacks. I mean, he's everywhere. He's what you want when you think of an outside linebacker, and I don't even care what scheme you're running. He may not prototypically be a 3-4 outside linebacker, but he can do it. So I think that he's way at the top. Now, Bart is a whole different discussion. I watched him play a couple times during the season, and I liked him, but he didn't have that relentlessness that Khalil Mack has. And then you go back. Everything comes down to your first impressions, and then you got to start over and go back again. And you forget, watching Barr, that he's 6'5", like 260-plus. He is a big dude, and he's one of these guys that could also play both ends. Now, the thing that drops him out of that Clowney Mack range is the fact that he's only played the position for 2 years. This is not a guy that's played, you know, the same spot for 10 years going all the way back to Pop Warner. I mean, he's new at it. So the fact that he's as productive as he was with such little experience on such a big stage, I say if you take him, you're taking him expecting a little upside. This is sort of an NBA pick. You take him in the top 10 or top 15 because you like what he's going to be 5 years from now, not what he's going to be next season.
That's so funny you mentioned NBA, because as you were talking about him, and yeah, the fact that he is relatively new to the position, I was actually thinking of like a big man from Senegal or somebody in Africa.
Yeah.
You know, the NBA loves to do that. You take this generally a big guy or somebody, and you think, boy, in a couple of years, look at what he's going to be. Although I guess Steven Adams, I guess you could substitute in New Zealand or some other place like that. But that tends to be international players in the NBA. This is a guy that's from America, but yeah, is a positional convert. You were talking earlier, and we were talking about Clowney. Every draft has a guy, and he's a guy that everybody focuses on. It's generally a quarterback because of the kind of league that we have today, the kind of landscape that it is. 2 years ago, certainly, that guy was Andrew Luck. This year, in this draft, we don't have such a guy, but let's start with the big three at quarterback. We have seen the landscape change over the last couple of months to where it seemed certain all three of these guys would go in the top 10 and that very possibly even in the top 5, to where, again, nothing is really guaranteed. All of these guys may slide to some degree. The guy that many think will go first of the three, Blake Bortles of Central Florida, he is a guy who is, again, lacking a little bit of polish but seems to be the prototypical big-armed pocket passer. Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football, clearly the most polarizing of any of the major quarterback candidates, probably in recent years. Questions, I think legitimate ones, about his height and his attitude, although, again, he can really make a lot of good throws for his size. And Teddy Bridgewater, the guy that many thought coming into the year was going to be the number one quarterback, he is judged now to be not necessarily really ascendant in any one area, albeit above average in a lot of areas. And, again, this whole silly season evaluation process, he's been the biggest victim of all because he did not have a very good pro day, and that is getting weighed in sort of disproportionately. So in terms of the vulnerable teams that need quarterbacks, which are always disproportionately near the top of the draft, how do you see it shaken out for that, I guess you could say now, former big three?
Well, I look at the top quarterbacks a little bit differently. And I'll just start by saying, you mentioned Bortles. I know a lot of people like him. Even some within our own ranks at FDH had shown some intrigue about him early on. I didn't see it then, and I don't see it now. Just for a point of reference, and I may change this later as we get closer, but I currently have Blake Bortles as number 39 on the big board. 39.
Okay.
I mean,
wow.
I've got a guy that plays a completely different position that I'm just really high on, Jeremy Itachu, who our own Ken Bex is not very excited about. I have him ahead of Bortles, just to put that out there. And the reason I'm telling you all this is I think you have to view this quarterback thing, similar to the Barr situation, as what are you getting? Where is the ceiling? Are we at the ceiling? Are we getting to the ceiling? Are we nowhere near it? And I think that's the reason why I have it. Johnny Football 1, and then I think it's Bridgewater, then, believe it or not, Carr, and then Bortles. And the reason for that is some of us may not love the character that Johnny Manziel is, the idea that he was, you know, what he was in college. He was brash. He was out there. No one could tell him what to do. And he is sort of, as people have compared, the, you know, Fran Tarkington with an attitude. The guy makes plays, and I was skeptical. This is another one like Clowney where I just said, nah, he's at best the fourth best quarterback. I really think when you go back and watch, he has a propensity to run out of the pocket before he should, and he's working on that. But the difference between last year and the year before is monumental. He can make every throw. He's impressive. He knows what he's talking about. I think his upside is ridiculous. I think you could be looking at a mobile Favre as far as upside goes. And I mean passing records, numbers, efficiency in winning, all of it. I think upside is phenomenal with him. Bridgewater, let's be honest, you'll agree with this. If we had this conversation the first week of January, I would have told you picking fourth overall that the Cleveland Browns or even the Jacksonville Jaguars would be lucky if he was able to fall that far from one to
yes.
three or four.
Absolutely.
Now it looks like if he goes in the first 20, it'll be surprising. And you've said it. It's all because of this song and dance that we do, because if everything was game footage only, he'd still be up there. And the pro day was a bad thing. Changing up your situation the day that everyone's watching is not smart. But I'll go back to the tape, and you know what? He can do everything. He's the smartest quarterback, I think, in this class. I think he goes through his progressions already better than everybody else. And if you go back, just watch the bowl game against Miami. He absolutely carved up a very respectable defense. Lit them to pieces. 400 yards, he threw like 78% completion, no interceptions, the four touchdowns. He was everywhere, made every good decision. He's what you want as a top-flight starter. Now, is he Andrew Luck? Probably not, but he's very, very well could be a top 15 starting quarterback in the NFL, which is really, in this day and age, all you need. And then moving on to Bortles, I just think he's where he is. I think he's Ben Roethlisberger. He's a big guy who can make some throws. He's not elite. He's not necessarily going to be the guy that wins the game for you, but he'll do a good job. And then Derek Carr, I think, much better than his brother. I think he's got the ability to make just about every throw. He surprised me with his intelligence that I've seen in some of the stuff that you're catching on TV. The speed in which he processes things is pretty good. So I have those four, and then I'll just throw in one other guy that I just really like, and I don't think I'm alone in this, but if you've got a good team and you just need a quarterback or you want to groom a future quarterback, take a serious look at A.J. McCarron. He gets the rub of being, you know, the guy handing the ball off to all these all pros, but I really do think he's going to be a solid quarterback. Maybe not a pro bowler, but I think he could definitely start and definitely help his team win games because he's a smart, heady guy. I don't think he's getting enough love right now.
I agree with you about that. As far as it goes to Teddy Bridgewater, I'll tell you, just having conversations with a lot of my friends, fellow Browns fans, I've said to them sort of incredulously as far as the supposed falling stock of Teddy Bridgewater, when did we get to be too good for Teddy Bridgewater? You know, you think back to the early autumn when the Browns started the season hot, I remember being conflicted, thinking, man, this is great that we're winning, but is it sustainable and we're going to take ourselves out of the Teddy Bridgewater sweepstakes? And now the odds are he's going to shoot right past us at four. And I'm sitting here going, what's wrong with this picture, Jason?
There was always this sentiment with, you know, situations like this. And I hate to keep it so specific to one team, but with the Browns, you know, coming in the situation that they were in last season and what they did in that draft, maybe the only good thing that the previous regime did for them is they set this draft up to have all these picks and to be in a good spot. And you're looking and going, stop it. Josh Gordon, go for 10,000 yards. I don't care, but lose the game, please. Because in the end, we had this sort of LeBron mentality. We're like, Teddy Bridgewater is the prize. And whatever it takes to get that is the end-all, be-all. And yet, as we've done so many times, we let a couple bad throws in a pro day or a slow 40 time detract us from the idea that for the last 18 months we've been in love with this kid like he's the next coming. But, you know, a couple bad days and all of a sudden, oh, he's just average. Well, I tend to agree with what I've seen as opposed to what I hear. So,
life is strange. You know, I mean, with Bridgewater, yeah, it was a bad pro day versus Derek Carr. With him, the reason he's not commonly considered to be in the big three is that for him it was an actual performance on the field. The Las Vegas Bowl against USC was fairly damaging. Before we move on to the marquee position of this draft, just want to ask you about the big hipster pick out there at the quarterback position. Everybody seems to think that Jimmy Garoppolo from Eastern Illinois, much like Tony Romo years before him at the same school, could have a nice long NFL career. That seems to be the sort of sleeper pick that everybody's rallying around this year.
I like Garoppolo. I've liked him ever since he weaseled his way into the Senior Bowl. It's weird to watch him because you see a guy that you just don't think is going to be on par with these other kids. And then he just goes and he slings it. He doesn't think. He just lets it fly, lets instincts take over. And I do like him. I say that, though, considering that he is a mid to late second rounder at the earliest. I think he'll be okay, whether he's, you know, a career backup or he's someday going to start, I don't know. But I think the real hipster pick, and maybe it's just I'm scouring the world and the internet for every little piece of information I can find, I think the real hipster pick is Tom Savage. Nobody cares about Pitt unless you're talking about Aaron Donald. And all of a sudden, just because he's big and he made a couple throws, like, there's people out there that say, oh, Aaron Donald could go in the first half of the first round. I'm like, wait a minute. We just sat for 2 months and have whittled ourselves down to the point where we're saying maybe one quarterback goes in the top 15. And now you're talking about Tom Savage is going to leapfrog Bridgewater and Bortles and Manziel, and he's going to be up. No. So right now is that period of time where people are going to come out of the woodwork and they're going to say Garoppolo this or even – Fails from, I think, San Diego State is getting a little run as an early first or second day pick, and then the Tom Savage thing was ridiculous. Of those, I think Garoppolo has the most staying power, unless Tom Savage is the kind of guy that goes to New England and just sits behind Tom Brady until it's his time. But I don't think the Garoppolo thing is crazy, but it is a little bit of a hipster pick.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a bubble there, I think. But not to say that he won't go somewhere and not justify it. That happens sometimes as well. I referred to this a second ago here, the marquee position of this year's draft. I'm always on the lookout, Jason, for what's going to be the second coming of the 1996 class of wide receivers with Marvin Harrison and T.O. and Keyshawn, and you go on and on down the line. It's the equivalent of the 83 class of quarterbacks. I'm almost ready to say we finally have it. It's been a false alarm a couple of years in the past. A couple times going into a season, I've thought, are we going to have players emerge that'll make this another great wide receiver crop? And it never seems to happen. I feel like it did happen in 2013 to where everybody was great enough to really push this class to that the front of the line there along with the class of 96. What I'd like to know, starting with from you, is how great does that make Sammy Watkins and Mike Evans if they're the 1 and 1A of what could be a legendary class?
Well, and here's the thing. I got 15 to 17 guys that I think project to being starters, whatever that means.
Wow.
Whether we're talking about your number one Pro Bowler go-to playmaker as like a Sammy Watkins or a Mike Evans, or we're talking about a slot receiver, number two, that takes a little pressure off your number one. I think there are as many as 17, and that's pushing it. That's taking a guy, number 17 is taking a guy that, you know, kind of fizzled but has every physical ability and he just needs to stay focused. But 15 at least, and what that says is, as I've been saying since pretty much before this last season started in college football, that Sammy Watkins is probably the best wide receiver prospect to come out since Calvin Johnson. I don't think that Sammy Watkins is the best receiver in a good receiver core class. I think he's the best receiver we've seen in like 8 years. which is why I have him so high. And you and I had a discussion off air a while ago about the feasibility of putting a Sammy Watkins on a team that has an elite top five, top ten wide receiver in the NFL. It's probably not the smartest thing to do, just because financially it becomes an issue down the road, and you don't know how long you're going to have him. But I think he's really that good that it's worth taking the risk on. And Mike Evans, I mean, some people want to say that is it the cart before the horse with Manziel or Evans as the reason for Texas A&M success. Mike Evans is pretty impressive. And again, I was skeptical in the beginning to believe that he's the next Vincent Jackson or whatever you want to say. But I do think that Mike Evans, with his size and his speed, for that size, is more than respectable, and he deserves every bit of the top. Now, some names just to throw out real quick. And you know how we do. The first round is almost easy just because everyone talks about the first round. So Odell Beckham from LSU is jumping up the board. Marquise Lee has dropped a little bit just because he was unimpressive in the offseason. Brandon Cooks is flying up the board just because he looks like another DeSean Jackson, ironically seeing a lot of people putting him with the Eagles. And then we get into the fun part. Kelvin Benjamin's a big name everyone wants to talk about because he's big. He's a big dude. My problem is he doesn't play like that. I get that everybody wants the 6'5" wide receiver because Calvin Johnson is sort of the staple for what everybody wants and never gets. But he's slow, he's inconsistent, he doesn't always catch his hands. I don't love Kelvin Benjamin as much as most people do. Jarvis Landry is a guy not many people talk about, and they should, because he's sort of like the reincarnated Hines Ward. Not the biggest guy, but tough as nails, can block with the best of them. But my favorite part of this wide receiver class, and this is why we start talking about 10, 15, 17 guys that are legit. Just some names to keep in mind. Allen Robinson, Penn State. Paul Richardson, Colorado. Dante Moncrief, Ole Miss. Devontae Adams, Fresno State. Jordan Matthews, Vanderbilt. Martavius Bryant, Clemson. Jared Abradaris of Wisconsin. Brandon Coleman of Rutgers. Corey Latimer from Indiana. I think every last one of those guys are starters. They may be number twos, but they're starters. And I think they're on the field most of the time. And we can go into great detail on every single one of them, but the ones that I'm most intrigued with would be Dante Moncrief. And Corey Latimer is starting to grow on me a little bit.
Well, when you look at the way that the offenses are these days, you figure that there's probably some impact number threes in there as well. Slot guys who aren't technically starters, but basically give you the impact of them. So, yeah, it's amazing. It's real catnip if you love the passing game when you look at the wide receivers this year and you think about what they're going to add to the NFL. The thing about Benjamin as well is that I've seen comparisons to Plaxico Burress. What's problematic is which Plax Burress? Obviously, the optimists are going to say prime Plaxico Burress, but before and after that prime, he was not really living up to it, shall we say. So that's all.
Well, and my thing with that is Benjamin is maybe 6'5", and I think Plax was, 6'4", maybe? But Plax wasn't 240-plus, and he also ran a lot faster than 4.6s. My issue is if you're going to spend a pick, especially a pick where you've got 15 guys that are going to go anywhere in the first 70 picks, you're going to spend a high draft pick on a guy that's just big, essentially. He's slow. He doesn't run good routes. Like I said, he catches with his body a lot, which you don't like. He's not a go-to guy yet. He may become one, and that's great. But if you're telling me that you think that this is Randy Moss or something, we should have a conversation because you shouldn't be voicing that opinion.
No.
I don't even like the Plax reference because Plax was fast, and he would go get the ball. If it was a toss-up between him and the corner was going to lose. And I don't get that impression from Benjamin.
Well, not only that, another name that has been thrown out. I was talking about this off air with another one of our FDH Lounge dignitaries, good old Johnny Adams. The name Corin Robinson, which again, for about 5 minutes, that guy was as good as anybody in the NFL. But again, before and after that point, yeah, things were kind of problematic. So you wonder about that with Benjamin when you're comparing him to these guys. If you're comparing him to them when they were in their prime – fine. If you're comparing them to the other stretches of their career, unfortunately, that is probably a more accurate body
Rick,
of work.
Let me add one last thought here with the wide receivers before you move on. We've mentioned almost 20 guys, and they're going to be legit. Now, here's what makes this wide receiver class so impressive, and maybe what will put you over the top where you can say, yes, this is the second coming. You've got guys like Dre Archer, Devin Street, who is the guy I was mentioning earlier, who kind of fell off at Pitt, but has every bit the tools to be good. Jeff Janis from Saginaw Valley State, believe it or not, could be productive. And then you've got Cody Hoffman and Chandler Jones. There are guys that are going to go in the fourth or fifth rounds that in any other year are third-round picks. So it's not just Sammy Watkins and Mike Evans. This thing, you'll be seeing solid wide receivers that will be productive in the NFL picked into day three.
Yeah, it is just a very, very rare bounty that there's going to be available in this year's draft. The one biggest positional mano-a-mano at a real high level, ironically, involves offensive tackles. So you're thinking kind of, you know, sumo and blocking one another. It's kind of fitting that that's the mano-a-mano of this year's draft. When you're looking at two guys jockeying in there, both should be top five picks. Greg Robinson and Jake Matthews. With Robinson, again, just a mauler, a physical road grader. With Matthews, just the excellence and the bloodlines that you get. So two different types of prototype franchise left tackles. What are your thoughts on the two and a preference if you have one?
Well, for the most part, I've been leaning towards Greg Robinson just because in the running game, he literally owns whoever he's blocking, period. However, I'm open to the idea of Jake Matthews leapfrogging him a little bit. Just because Jake Matthews is more of a balanced tackle, he's as good against the run as he is blocking for the run as he is for blocking for the pass. And the bloodline thing, a lot of people are going to dismiss that. And I'm not saying that just because he's a Matthews, it automatically means he's going to be good. But what I do think is that just gives him an added background of understanding. And then on top of it, he's been coached by a lot of good guys along the way. My latest mock that I threw together, I actually had Jake Matthews going number two to St. Louis because of the bloodline, the relationship with Jeff Fisher and the family, and feeling that having a guy that's better pass blocking might be more important to a team like St. Louis. The one thing that's kind of scary in the offensive tackle ranks is Taylor Lewan from Michigan, who I had in the middle of the first, is jumping up there too. I read something recently that someone leaked information that Oakland thinks that he's the number one tackle, which means we probably have no idea how the tackles are going to shake out. And despite knee issues, I think Cyrus Kiwanjo from Alabama might be a serious possibility for a team like Miami in the middle of the first. So, I mean, you have five. But clearly, there's a 1A and a 1B with Robinson and Matthews. But there are five that probably go in the top 20. So it's impressive, but like the wide receivers, there's clearly two guys at the top. And whether you like Greg Robinson's physical ability to just manhandle other men or you like the balance of Jake Matthews, you can't really go wrong either way.
No, you really can't. It's a great spot to be in. It's a tremendous dilemma, if you want to call it that. Question I want to ask you now involves the team that I think is the poster child for this year's draft. And you're talking about a very, very deep draft and a team that has been able to stockpile a lot of picks. Coincidentally, our own Cleveland Browns probably are the poster children for this year's draft, and not just because of the recent draft movie that coincidentally was based around a fictional version of the Browns. But again, they're the example of a team looking to turn around a tremendously long stretch of futility with an impact draft and with the chance to do so if they maximize those 10 picks and those five picks in the first three rounds. I actually have two questions to you that were submitted by fellow FDH Lounge dignitary Chris Galloway. He wanted me to ask you two different things. One is just in a general sense, with the way things are going with the Browns right now, good time to buy tickets? He had alluded to possibly, I think, a Loge or something like that he was considering getting in on one of those. he wanted to know, does Jason think it's a good time for that? Not necessarily buying low financially, but buying low on them in terms of their success and being able to ride it out through the good times. Additionally, he's a proponent of two quarterbacks in this draft, one relatively high, another one in the mid-rounds. That gives you three potential options. If you're getting a guy like Garoppolo, maybe in the third round, another quarterback higher, plus you have Brian Hoyer, the thought that one of the three clearly has to pan out. So your thoughts, your advice on buying tickets to the Browns season tickets and on the two quarterback draft theory.
Well, I'm absolutely going to say yes to the first one. And normally I would say that just as a fan. You're just inclined to say, this is our time or whatever. But, you know, you look around, and I can remember when Jameer Miller was the only Pro Bowler they had in, like, 5 years. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're coming off a season where, 4-12 is bad. But they were in most of those games. And it was almost like if you could give me a Pop Warner quarterback who knew his head from his keister, they'd have a shot at maybe winning one or two of those games. Give them a good quarterback, it's another two or three games, and then you're right in the thick of it. And then the fact that 9 Pro Bowlers, one of which, in my opinion, is probably the second, third, or fourth best wide receiver in the NFL, and last year was the best. You have an up-and-coming tight end who's probably in the top 5 now, which I'll give you credit. I had to come around on that idea. And a running back that no one's really excited about, but I feel better than the alternative. So I think they've got a nice little core going. And with the type of draft this is and having the picks where we have them or where they have them, it seems to me that you can build what you need as opposed to just picking guys and hoping for the best. So I absolutely think that they're in a good spot. Now, here's the catch. It's Cleveland. So are they going to screw the pooch or are they going to make the right decision? And that's really the thing that guides all of this. So my initial thought is, it's a great time comparative to the last, 12 years or so. Any Browns fan worth their salt would have jumped in 99, but in hindsight being what it is, that would have been a mistake. As far as the second part, two quarterbacks I think probably a stretch. I don't know that you need it because let's say that they get one of the top three quarterbacks in some way. You still got Hoyer. He's not a bum. He was able to move the team. And if you end up getting a guy as a top 10, top 15 starting quarterback in the NFL, say 3 years from now, and Hoyer's your backup, I think you've got your two quarterbacks. So I don't think you need to do it. But that said, as we look down the board, any guy that's probably going to go in the mid, late second on back, Logan Thomas is intriguing just to kind of have him and groom him because he's not good now. Stephen Morris from Miami has some upside. And then you've even got Heisman Trophy finalist, but not winner, Jordan Lynch from Northern Illinois. I mean, there's guys you can get in the fifth, sixth round that you absolutely could sit. My question is, what else is out there? If we're tapped out and there's just not good defensive players or you don't like the offensive line depth later on in the round, then go, grab a quarterback and stash him. But I don't think it's necessarily a need that they have to address. And I would say if you're going to pick two quarterbacks, one's in the first round and one's probably in the second or third. I would buy high on the quarterbacks just because I think the middle-of-the-road quarterbacks in this draft are going to go higher than they should.
They probably are. And by the way, I accidentally underscored Chris's billing there. Fellow original FDH Lounge dignitary, Chris Galloway, he was part of the original group along with you and I and a few others back in the day. They're posing those questions to you. To bring this full circle here, in looking at the draft, again, everybody wants to do what Seattle did the last couple of years, the ultimate in extracting value. They turned over that franchise in the 4 years since John Schneider has been running the draft there and with Pete Carroll and everybody else doing it. An extraordinarily young and, oh, by the way, cheap core of players. That's not going to be the case going forward with Sherman and some of the other guys. Earl Thomas starting to get paid, but that's what everybody wants to do is get those young, cheap guys on their first contract, impact players, superstars out of the high and middle rounds. What are just some additional thoughts that you have, just to kind of bring this full circle here, whether it be on a micro level, certain players we haven't really talked about yet, or on a macro level, philosophies that can help teams accomplish such a goal.
Well, first thought is, if it was that easy, everybody'd be doing it. I think there was a little bit of luck with what Seattle did. And they did have a strategy, and you know, to the most part, it really did work. Just throwing out some names, there are guys that are going to get picked too early. There's always reaching that happens. And I'm just going to throw out a few names that I just like in general and you can get throughout that no one's talking about. Cornerback Stanley Jean-Baptiste from Nebraska is a big guy that fits that sort of Seattle corner style, but he's probably a mid to late second rouner. Deion Buchanan from Washington State, I think, is the best safety in the draft. Now, I'm in a very small minority that have him ahead, that, you know, my heart would say he's ahead of Clinton Dix and Calvin Pryor, but I think he's one of those guys that a few years from now, people are going to go, how the heck did he fall to the second round? Inside linebacker, as always, is pretty boring. C.J. Mosley looks nice. I have a feeling he's going to go to a team that's already good, though, so that's really not very helpful. Outside linebacker, we have three potential guys that are very intriguing. Ryan Shazier from the Ohio State, that you're geographically close to, who looked good in college, and then he got to the combine, and everyone was like, oh my God, this is the second coming of, you know, whoever. He's fast, he's got the size, but is that going to translate? And that's really a big question that has to be answered. D. Ford, I really do like. I just think he's more of an outside linebacker than a defensive end. And the name I mentioned earlier in the show, Jeremiah Atachu, who's from Georgia Tech and hasn't played very long. He's an upside pick.
Yeah,
but those are the ones that really jump out at me. I think we've covered offense pretty well. Carlos Hyde's the only running back I'm really excited about. The other guys will be serviceable at best.
I think that's probably a good read on that. This is not a very exciting running back class. We'll have to see how it all shakes out. But, again, I was very, very psyched for this conversation. That's why, like I said, I wanted to make it the 700th hour of programming that we had to take us over that mark. I knew it would live up to the billing, and it did. Thank you so much, my man, for a great conversation. We will convene again after the draft, hopefully with the aforementioned Chris Galloway, as we've done in years past. Break it all down, talk about the winners and the losers, and, of course, everybody can check out the companion to all this with Jason's wisdom and guidance, Pro Football Draftology 2014, available at FantasyDraftHelp.com, the FDHLounge.com, and other fine 21st Century Media Alliance outlets. Thank you, my man, and we'll convene after the draft.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.